this song is so beautiful, right? If you listen to the words of this song, you would hear, how do I say goodbye to somebody that I've known for my whole life, right? You've gave me my name and you gave me the color of my eyes. This guy is talking about his dad that had passed away. And I feel like this is something that many of us take for granted, right? Take for granted because we assume that our parents are always going to be there, and then our parents chila and it's time for them to knock off and we have no idea what to do with our lives. So how are we handling grief? How are we handling and accepting and understanding and taking in the process of grief when we don't even want to accept that people are actually a very big part of our lives? I have a cousin. I have a cousin of mine that had lost his father, right? And he is not coping. I know he's not coping, but he doesn't know he's not coping because after his dad's passing, he had just spiraled completely out of control. And now he's dabbling into the dangerous arts of things, right? And so my plan, you know, I've got this whole plan planned out, you know, superwoman of the family. I'm planning an intervention and then I'm planning like counseling sessions and then I'm planning to put him in a better space. But this leaves me with the question of how do we know when we are not doing okay after somebody's passing? How do we know that we are not okay? Because, sometimes we cry and we think about them and, you know, we are sad, but how do we know that this is not the ordinary sadness? This is something that I need help for. This is something that I need to get assistance for, because many of us think that it is just grief. You know, I'm just mourning my mom, or I'm just mourning my lover. I'm just mourning my brother, my sister. I'm just mourning my friend. But then how do you know when it starts to eat you up inside? And this is something that I realized after my own dad passed away. When both my dads passed away, like, and they're not together. It's like my mom's husband and my biological dad. When my dad passed away the first time around in 2018, I think that, because I was so in and out of life. And at that time, I think that I was still. Yeah, no. I was sober at the time. Yeah, I was sober because I thought I was still drinking. I would have said like, yeah, I would have blamed it on the alcohol. I would have said like, I didn't feel nothing because I was drinking. But, with my stepdad, I think it was easier for me to accept his passing, right? Not because he was ill and all of that, but because, we did everything correctly. We did everything correctly and we sent him off correctly. And us sending him off correctly, I think that gave me the closure and the peace that wherever he is from here, he is in no harm's way. He is at peace. He's happy. He's fine because he was buried in the manner in which the religion that he had chosen for himself, accommodated. So he was a Muslim. And he was buried in a Muslim way. He was not buried, because what happens a lot of times when somebody passes away, those that are alive and those that are stronger in will and in power and maybe can speak more than others, right? They usually dominate the conversation about where are we going to take our deceased and where are we going to bury him and what clothes are we going to put him in and what are we going to do with his property and his things and all of that. But I feel that, my mother was married into such a lovely and warming family and a warm family, right? That they didn't give my mother stress. So there was no anger apart from one auntie from Oganja, one auntie that had covered, him, and she jacked the death certificate. She literally stole it. She stole the death certificate and she went to maybe claim her things and all of that. And she didn't contribute anything. Apart from that, there was no drama in terms of my father's last wishes and my father's, way of being, because he was also a Muslim. So even though the tragedy was that he died of alcoholism, right? Even though there was that tragedy, there was a sense of principle within his funeral arrangements, there was a sense of principles. You know, all of us, you know, some of us, we wore hijabs, and then we also gave him a memorial service, but the memorial service was not our regular Elsen or Lutheran way. It was held by the imams, and they washed their person, and they oiled their person, and they perfumed their person, and they wrapped their person up. So there was no suit that we purchased, because he didn't want that. And he was very clear about what he wants. And I think we honored that so much. And there was no disrespect. You know how sometimes sometimes when something is new to us and something is strange to us, we have a tendency of taking videos and taking pictures, right? And when we take these videos and pictures, we circulate them with our friends, maybe out of shock. So for example, with the Muslim funerals, they are buried at daybreak, so before the sun comes up, and they're buried like in one day after the passing. It doesn't take long. And also they are buried in a specific way. They're not buried in coffins. They're buried in a specific way inside the grave, and they also face a particular way. And also the tombstone that is there is also made out of certain types of material and not just our ordinary material, because they don't need anything that's made from metal or from fire. So those are the principles, right? So when something like that happens in an Elsen or a Lutheran community, usually a lot of people take pictures and then they show their friends and their family members and whoever will listen about this shocking thing or this shocking experience that they had. And the ones that are sent this content are the ones that blow it out of proportion. And then it circulates throughout the internet. It goes viral throughout the internet, and it now becomes a mockery, a shame thing, a what, and there's no respect in it. And I can honestly say this with all my heart, that that didn't happen in a community that had the ability to do that, and in a community that is as primitive, I would say is as primitive, like as any of us that have not seen anything of this nature. There was nothing that circulated anyway. There was nobody that had their phones out. There was nobody that was taking videos. There's nothing like that. The only videos and pictures that we have are those that were taken, for the family purposes, like, you know, of my mom and of his mom and of his siblings and, you know, and the children. It was just that. And I think that in his passing, there was a lot of peace. There was a lot of peace that came with it. There was a lot of peace that came with my spirit as well. They didn't come and nobody, there was no uncle that came from way to come and harass my mom. Like, yeah, and our brother's house and our brother's car and our brother's, there was nothing like that. There was no harassment at all. At all. And when I say at all, I mean at all, except for my younger brother's mother that had now decided that she's taking him because she wants to be getting the money from Ministry of Veteran. So Ministry of Veteran and Ministry of Gender, because he was a veteran. So she decided that she's going to take her child, that has been living with the father ever since he was like four. Has been living with the father. He's a big boy now, Kingly. He's a big boy. I think he's grade 12 now. He's going to varsity next year. So she decided to take him, but she took him because she wanted the money from veteran and the money from Ministry of Gender, you know, the one for orphans. And my mom's argument was that, you can have the money, you can be getting the money, and then you use the money. It is not a problem. Just give me the child so that I can put him through a good education and I can put him through life, you know. Let me do this for the child, because my mom had been very attached to Kingley. It was her child, you know, very attached, even though it's her stepson. He was her child in such a way that she had put him on the medical aid and she had put him in everything, because he came to us when he was 4 years old, you know? So she had no beef, and the mom is just an ordinary lady from the north. So she had no beef. But it was his mother that decided an alternative, and ultimately the only person that has the right to choose anything is the parent, right? So she had to let him go and she cried a lot. I think that that's the first time that during the funeral that I saw her like cry a lot. She cried for the boy, you know, she cried for the boy and she was very unhappy about that. But apart from that, there was a lot of closure when it came to my stepdad's death.
Early morning, there's a message on my phone. It's my mother saying, darling, please come home. I fear the worst, but how could you leave us all behind? There's so much to say, but there's so little time. So how do I say goodbye to someone who's been with me for my whole damn life? You gave me my name and the color of your eyes. I see your face when I look at mine. So how do I say goodbye when I couldn't? You always saw the best in me. Right or wrong, you were always on my side. But I'm scared of what life without you's like. And I saw the way she looked into your eyes. And I promise if you go, I will make sure she's alright. So how do I say goodbye? Someone who's been with me for my whole damn life. You gave gonna steal some time and start again. You'll always be my closest friend. And someday we're gonna make it out. Just hold the light. Just hold the light high, high. So how do I say goodbye to someone who's been with me for my whole damn life? You gave me my name and
so with that, there was a lot of comfort when it came to my stepdad's passing. There was nothing really that allowed me to spiral, because I went home happy. I went home happy and I went home at peace, and I went home like, it was just the absence. I felt more sorry for my mom because this was her best friend. I felt more sorry for my mom because she had to now find a balance of living without her husband, you know. She had to find a balance. She had to learn how to live without him. And this was somebody that, even if he's far, my parents were like high school people. Like, and their love was a love that I wanted for myself as well. Because even though they had imperfections, and they both do, there was a love that was very deep there, because my dad knew how to love my mom and my mom knew how to love her husband. And they would talk for hours, you know, that super hour that goes on there. They would finish that super hour and then recharge and then call back and then recharge and then call back. And like, yeah. So they had that kind of love where they talked for like 4 hours, and she put the phone on loudspeaker, and then she does her things, and then they'll talk. And that's when he's not around. And when he is around, they would talk like all night. It's just mumbled. It's just like, you know, so, it was very lonely for her. It was extremely lonely for her. And, she tried to seek comfort within us, but you know, we also have our own lives and stuff. So she would like come to the room in the middle of the night and she would like move up, you know, and she'd sleep with me and the baby. And then one day she wants to sleep with my younger sister. My younger sister doesn't want, you know, the one I called on Thursday. She doesn't want because she's a big girl now and she wants to spend her night talking to her boyfriend and she would sit in the sitting room alone and she would watch stuff alone because all of us are like in the room and we are young and we are living our lives and. But luckily, right? The pleasures of being a grandparent was the fact that she had these two little people, which was now Elo and Natasha. She had these two little people that adored her, that still do. They adore her and they were just fully present and they were just fully with her. I remember the day that my dad passed away, you know, my mom was at the shop with her grandkids. I think they went to buy water or whatever. They do a lot of walking and they do a lot of stuff together. So, when they had come back, she had received the phone call that he had passed away. So when they had come back, my son ran and I was in the outside room. My son ran. And he had like one tear, like this one tear that was running down his face, you know, and he came to tell me, you know, and I don't think he fully understood what death was. But he knew that it was a sad thing and he looked at me to somehow guide him through the experience because this was their grandfather and they had to, you know, they had to learn also now to live without their grandfather because their grandfather was also a person that they climb all over him and yo, guys. You know, when I think of my dad, I don't think about it often, but when I talk about him, that's when I remember, like, there were so many elements of fatherhood and grandfatherhood that this man played, right? And those are memories that I treasure because, he gave love in a world where I never fathomed that it could be like that to have a dad because I didn't have a present dad. My biological father was not a present dad, but then I got now this dad and I met him like in my senior years. I think I was like, what, 20? So I met him in my senior years. And even with that, it was like swooping up an 8-year-old child and like just learning and being and these were the pleasures. And even when the children came along, he was fully present because even, the day that I went to give birth, my dad drove me to the hospital. He drove me to the hospital 3 times because I thought I was in labor. And then he woke up and he's like, let's go and get a baby. And then we came back because, you know, no, you're not having the baby. Then we came back like 3 times, you know, and not once did he complain. Not once did he say anything. He carried all the bags and he was happy. So even when the grandkids came along, grandkids were following him like, you know, like ducks, or like chicken. Yeah, like ducks, I would say, because ducks are the ones that really follow their parents and they imprinted on him. And I think that, at the end of his life, I was more happy that I had him. I was more happy that I got to experience him. I was more happy that I at least had a chance to be loved by a dad, to be having a present dad, to have somebody that is down for me, you know, down for me and my child, you know. And he was extremely present and loving, and he was also extremely uniting, because even with his kids, because my parents didn't have children of their own because they married in their senior years. And that's what I keep telling people, that sometimes you see couples and you think that, oh no, they've been married for 30 years, but it's not. It's only that they found each other at a perfect time for one another and they get married in their senior years. At this point, like none of them, they didn't have kids. My mom couldn't be a mom, like, whoa, like her last, like no, you know? So, he made it a point to unite the children, like my wife's kids and my kids. And then we put them together. So we always had like the family things. It was Jennifer and Jessica and Calista and just, you know, and Natasha and Kingley, you know, we all came together and it was good. So at the end of his life, I was more happy that I got to experience this and I got to be part of it. And, I felt sorry for his wife, but also the house seemed empty, but it also seemed full because he had so many memories, guys. Like my dad's memories were beautiful. Like every single memory, there's no memory of him that I have where he's beating us down or he's violent or he's shouting at his wife or there was nothing like that. You know, in our household, there was nothing like that. So there were no bad memories. It was just funny memories, like literally funny. It was just, he was such a comedian in so many ways and he was such a good teacher in so many ways. There was nothing that he would teach you that you wouldn't learn once. He would teach you once and then you got it like full stop, like nah, sharp. And so it was just more about, we also didn't shy away from the fact that we would be talking about him. My mom is a very open person. She likes to, she hears you when there is distress. If it's just these anger things, if it's just what, she doesn't hear. But when there is distress and all of that, she really honestly does hear you. And, part of the hearing, elements, when it came to my mother, is that she allowed us to talk about him. She allowed us to express ourselves. She allowed us to talk about how much we miss him. She allowed, she really honestly didn't, she didn't let it just become one of those things. She allowed us to love him and get over it. So how do I say goodbye? How do I say goodbye?
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. The bottom of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. Staring at the ceiling in the dark. Same old empty feeling in your heart. Cause love comes slow and it goes so far. Well, you see her when you fall asleep, but never to touch and never to keep. Cause you loved her too much and you dive too deep. Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only
know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. Burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go.
What would I do without your smart mouth? Drawing me in and you kicking me out. You've got my head spinning, no kidding. I can't pin you down. What's going on in that beautiful mind? I'm on your magical mystery ride. And I'm so dizzy, don't know what hit me, but I'll be alright. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning. Even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Oh, how many times do I have to tell you? Even when you're crying, you're beautiful too. The world is beating you down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall, you're my muse. My worst distraction, my rhythm and blues. I can't stop singing, it's ringing in my head for you. My head's underwater, but I'm breathing fine. You're crazy and I'm out of my mind. 'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I'll give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning. Even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. All
give me all of you. Cards on the table, we're both showing hearts, risking it all, though it's hard. 'Cause all
Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I'll give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. I give you all of me, and you give me all of you. Oh. My mother said I'm too romantic. She said you're dancing in the movies. I almost started to believe her. Then I saw you and I knew. Maybe it's 'cause I got a little bit older. Maybe it's all that I've been through. I'd like to think it's how you lean on my shoulder, and now I see myself with you. I don't say a word, but still you take my breath, and still the things I know. There you go, saving me from out of the cold. Fire on fire will normally kill us. With this much desire, together we're winners. They say that we're out of control, and some say we're sinners. But don't let them ruin our beautiful rhythms. 'Cause when you unfold me and tell me you love me, and look in my eyes, you are perfection, my only direction. It's fire on fire. It's fire on fire. When we fight like lions, but then we love and feel the truth. We lose our minds in a city of roses. We won't abide by any rules. I don't say a word, but still you take my breath, and still the things I know. There you go, saving me from my. Desire, together we're winners. They say that we're out of control, and some say we're sinners. But don't let them ruin our beautiful rhythms. 'Cause when you unfold me and tell me you love me, and look in my eyes, you are perfection, my only direction. It's fire on fire. Normally kill us, but this much desire, together we'll win us. They say that we're out of control, and some say we're sinners, but don't let them ruin our beautiful rhythms. Fire on fire, we're normally kill us, but this much desire, together we'll win us. They say that we're out of control, and some say we're sinners, but don't let them ruin our beautiful. Cause when you unfold me and tell me you love me, then look in my eyes. You are perfection, my only direction. It's fire on fire. You are perfection, my only direction. It's fire on fire.
Is there sound coming out?
Let me start you just when I call action, be looking at.
Written all over your face.
been awakened. Every rule I had you breaking is the risk that I'm taking. I'm never gonna shut you out.
Feeling sure is the only way to make friendships grow, but I'm too afraid now. strong I am. I put my armor on, I'll show you that I am. I'm unstoppable, I'm a butcher with no brakes. I'm invincible, yeah, I win every single.
afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. If you have just joined us, it is Elizabeth's World and we are just doing, we're doing wild things out here. So ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about, how are we really honestly handling grief, you know? And I was talking about my own experiences. If you have just joined us, we're also on Facebook Live. We're going to be live for like 5 minutes because you guys are supposed to download the app and you guys are supposed to be listening. And then you guys, if you guys didn't do that, that is walala wasala wa flopa. It is what it is. So we're talking about that understanding of what you are actually going through. You know, we understand that when somebody passes away and somebody passes away and they're no longer in our lives, we cry, we grieve, we mourn, we are sad, we are hurt, we are angry, we are all the down emotions. You know, we're not upbeat, we're not what, we're not upbeat and all of that. But how do you know when your grief and your mourning is getting out of hand? Because many of us assume that, oh no, I'm just supposed to feel like this because, you know, I lost someone or, somebody passed away. So I'm supposed to feel like this. But how do you know when it has gone too far? I think that when you should really be worried about your grieving process is when it gets out of control. When it gets out of control is when you want to numb it. When you want to walk away from it, when you want to escape it, right? And then I would say that, that one, out of control is there. That one is out of control now. That's how you would categorize as, whoa. Okay, so this is getting out of control because now I'm never at home because the morning is at home, right? I'm never outside because the morning is outside. Or I'm never sober, yeah, because many of us use alcohol and narcotics to escape our realities. And escaping our realities would mean that we don't want to be sober, we don't want to be present, we don't want to be there where the hurt is. And that is how you know when it's getting out of control. When you want to walk into not being present. So I was talking about my stepdad's passing, right? So with my stepdad, it was more, there was a lot of closure when it came to my stepdad's passing. There was a lot of closure because we did everything that he wanted. He was a Muslim. He got buried in a Muslim way. We did the ritual, you know, we did the bathing, we did the oils, the only thing that we didn't do was the time. Because usually, Muslims get buried like at sunrise. So we didn't do that because, he also passed away in Rundu. So we had to first, you know, fly down and then go and get him and then put him in a morgue, you know, in Oshakati, put him in a morgue in Oshakati. And then from there, we also had to now do the whole process. And part of the difficulties that we had faced was the fact that, by law, you're not allowed, you know, by law, you're not allowed to just carry a corpse. Like, we're taking this corpse, we're putting it in a hearse and it's not in a coffin or anything because their religion dictates you have to get a coffin. Now, what we did that was a little, I think it's because of grief and fear and also the norm of how we bury our own people, you know, in the Elsen and the Lutheran, how we bury our own people. So we got a coffin. Now the coffin was like 16 grand. You know, because we thought that, a nice thing that we are doing for pubs, you know, coffin. And it just so happened that, the imam, which is now the pastor, the imam was like, no, we don't do these ones. We don't do these coffins and all of that. And also at the time at the morgue, they didn't have the Muslim coffins, the Muslims and the Jews, they have the same kind of boxes. It's just a wooden box, nothing fancy. It's just a wooden box where you transport your person. They didn't have those in stock. Okay. They didn't have those. So we opted to just get a coffin. But looking back right now, I would have said that we could have gotten something cheaper and also saved resources. But it was for our dad. So no, we're not doing that. So we got a nice one, you know, pricey, nice. And we carried him in the coffin, and then we took him to the house where we had a memorial service. Now, usually, the Muslims, they don't do the whole memorial service thing because, their burials are done at daybreak. So we asked, you know, a provision from the mosque. We asked if we could have this provision for us as a family and as friends to, and his colleagues, his veteran people, like, you know, like to come through and then just to pay our respects and for him to leave, peacefully. So we asked for this provision, and, the imam, gave us this provision, and we had our memorial service. We had our speaking, and we talked, and it was goodbye. And then we now took him to the cemetery. And when we took him to the cemetery, he was now in the coffin, and we went to the cemetery, and it was so wild because, I think in death, many of us expect to fight. We expect to fight and to be unhappy about something. And when this thing, it's like when we are unhappy about these things, right? Then it gives us a reason to feel something. But with him, it was smooth sailing. It was honestly smooth sailing. There was a lot of contentment. And okay, with me being the fighter that I am, I made sure, you know, like that he's going to, when we are going to the cemetery, I'm not going to stay home with my grandmother. I'm going to go to the cemetery. I'm going to make sure that it's going to be done properly. And I'm going to, because I was leaning more towards that. If it's not done the way he wanted it to be done, because this is something that he has always wanted. This is something that he has told me time and time again, eh? Time and time again, my child, don't let them bury me in their church ways, because I've never been. And it was such a pleasure because, in the Oshiwambo culture, usually mothers of the deceased and families of the deceased usually have more power and more say. But I am fortunate enough and I'm privileged enough to say that my mother had been married in an absolutely amazing family. My grandmother, who is now my stepdad's mom, my grandmother, there was no fuss. There was no fuss. Nangodo. There was no fuss. There was no fuss. She's like, oh, because they are Kwambis, right? She's like, oh, onungere, ochwari ahogorora, eh? Ahogorora kukara megongarondino, naturandure nike chari ehore. Like, eh? Ochwari ehore, naturandure nike chari ehore. You know? So, in other words, she's like, if he had chosen to be in, he had chosen to be a Muslim, and he had died a Muslim, then let us follow his wishes and let us follow his wants and his heart's desire. Let us not, as a family, because he's not here to advocate for himself, let us not derail it because it makes it easier and more comfortable for us. So she's like, no, guys, his wife is there. Let her decide. And, but from me as his mother, I would say, let him be buried in the way that he wanted to be buried. And my mom, they're Muslims, right? Her and her husband, they're Muslims. So it was, my mom is like, yes, please, you know, let's do this. And then we went to the cemetery. So now what we know about the Islamic burials, right? We know that one, they don't get buried in coffins, not unless it's the Muslim coffins that were out of stock, right? The ones that are not made by with iron, and they're not made with fire. Right? Because those are things that you need to know. Are we together? Those are things that you need to know. So I went there to go and, you know, because my mother's advocate, my dad's advocate. I am an advocate. I'm an advocate of my family, you know? So I went there to go and make sure that nobody's going to do funny things. And, you know, because also he died a sudden death. So I didn't want it to be not, he literally just went to bed, woke up in the morning, went to the bathroom, went back to bed, never woke up again. Something peaceful, something calm. And I feel that because of everything that he had been through a war, he had been through many things. I think that that is the one privilege that God gave him, that life had been so hard. Can I make death easy? So for me, I was very, very calm about it. And I was chilled. you know, I was chilled about it. And then we went to the cemetery, and then the imam had now mentioned that this is the procedure that we're going to take, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we're going to go about it. And so the Muslims don't get buried in this coffin. So they took him out of the coffin, and then they made the hole on the side, because they get buried in a specific direction. They get buried in a specific way. They get wrapped up in a blanket, you know, a white blanket from head to toe. And so they had to take him out, and then they had to sikirira. If you know anything about the Bible, there is also the part where they buried Jesus, right? They buried Jesus in a cloth, and then they put him in a tomb, and then they closed the tomb. So it's the same concept with Muslims as well. So with that whole process was done. And also the imam had asked, not demanded, not threatened, not coerced, not manipulated, had asked that nobody takes videos, nobody takes pictures. You see with your eyes, and if you're going to tell the tale, but we are not going to have videos of somebody's body going viral online, because you guys don't understand other people's religions and so forth. And I think that they were so shocked in the way that the procedure was going, that there was nothing. There was no video. There's nothing that was sent to nobody. Everybody just looked with their eyes, and everybody just understood. And we buried him. And then there was a coffin that was empty. It was just standing there. So now all of us are like, okay, so we have an empty coffin. And coffins are not things like, oh, no, he doesn't fit. Please, I want a refund. There's nothing like that. And a coffin is most not like, I remember the imam telling us, like, a coffin is not a table. It's not something that you can say that, oh, no, can we give you guys this coffin and then you guys can use it, you know, because we are not going to use it anymore. So he opted for us to just bury the coffin. So he was buried underneath, and then on top of like a top of layers of sand, they put the coffin, and an open coffin that had nobody in it, and then we just buried it with him. Like, that's it. So I think that for me gave me so much closure. It gave me so much closure. It gave me so much peace that it wasn't really like, oh, my dad. Like, no, like it was goodbye, dad. I love you and I appreciate you for the love that you have given me, because he was my stepdad and I had an absent father my whole life up until my mom married him, and it was absolutely perfect. There was no sense. There was no violence. There was no trauma that came from our house, in his presence, you know, most probably prior to him. Yes, but in his presence, all the years that we had spent together were absolutely amazing. The way he loved his wife, I always used to say that if I could get a man that loves me as much as my dad loves my mother, then I would be settled. They were best friends. They were really taking the time that they had together. They really did, you know, like embrace the time that they had together. And it was beautiful throughout, all the way till the very last breath, all of it. And then there was no fight. There was no, you know, our humble, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we want the kettle, the what. There was nothing like that. He comes from a family that the family is like, no, but he's married. He's married. So let his wife decide. And his wife just, you know, distributed, and she did what was right, you know. So it was such smooth sailing and such smoothness. And even after his passing, you know, my mom goes and visits her mother-in-law and goes home, you know, to her. And that was the beauty of it. And I think that because there was no trauma caused before, because there was no anger caused, dealing with his death and dealing and being present with his passing was a lot more easier. And then, right? Then 2022 came. 2022 came. Then my biological dad passed away. So with my biological dad, it was wild. 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 I think because I had so many unresolved issues with him as a person, I felt like his death robbed me. I felt like he abandoned me again. You know, like, oh, one more time. Nam call this. One more time. I was so angry. I was so angry. I was angry at the fact that nobody told us he was in the hospital. I was angry that nobody told us that he had a heart operation. And I was angry that he had a heart attack on the table. I was angry. I wanted to see the autopsy. I wanted to see everything. I wanted to see. You know? But that was just anger. You see? So I had that this bottled up anger because of his death. And then I had my own issues with him as my parent. You know? Like, bro. Like, I have a bone to pick with you. I had a bone to pick with him, but I was planning on having that bone to pick like on another day. And then that another day never came. So I was like, I was mad. So I was mad at him. And that's, I think that is what made my grieving process with him very difficult. It was very difficult. And that's why I'm talking about this. I'm asking you, how do you know when you as an individual, right, are grieving, but you are getting out of control? Because we all say when somebody passes away, we all say like, oh no, I'm just sad. You know, like, oh no, I recently lost my dad. Like, oh, you know, I'm just sad. We all say that, but there are telltale signs that are within us as human beings that we know are not things that we do on a normal basis. And even if we were absolutely perfectly fine, we wouldn't do this, but we do them when somebody passes away. So how do we know when we are going too far with this that we are doing? That's what I'm asking about. And then, so he passed away and then I went into a state of depression. So I'm not eating. I'm not nothing. There's nothing happening. I'm just getting thin. I know you can't imagine me thin, but okay. Like when I say I was thin, you guys are like, what? You were thin? When? Like, yeah, I was thin that time when I was mourning my dad. I was thin. So I lost a lot of weight. And then also I put myself in work and I excelled in the work. I excelled, in the work, but I was overdoing it. I was overdoing it. I was overdoing it. I was overdoing it. And then it also caused my heart to have problems. You know, so that's how I knew, like, when I went to sit down now with the doctor, like, yeah, your heart is tripping. I said, what? My heart is the strongest organ I have. Like, what you mean it's tripping? This thing is made of steel. Like, what you mean it's tripping? The doctor's like, you're going to have to slow it down or otherwise you're going to die of a heart attack because your heart is just doing things and your heart and your heart and your heart. And that's how I knew that, oh, okay, so I'm not actually grieving. I'm just staying within the anger and I'm spiraling out of control. And I'm just glad that I didn't spiral into a world of I'm drinking and I'm doing drugs and I'm gambling and I'm doing all these things that would have been detrimental to me today. I'm glad that I'm glad that I didn't have external factors, you know, external things to come and assist me with my process. And in this, I learned to pace myself because I'm a teacher of self, right? So I learned to pace myself and I learned to understand. And I also learned to, if I'm going to fight, let me just fight. Because now it was the whole estate thing. You know, we had to start with the estate thing. We had to start. And it was now, and then that one was gruesome and it was gnarly. It was nothing like my stepdad. It was nothing like my stepdad's. It was gnarly. It was gruesome. It was name calling. It was sides. It was picking sides. It was so bad. And that's why I keep telling people that no matter what, even if you have only two cows, no matter what, write it down. Have a will. Have a will so that people don't have to go through what we are going through till today. Yeah. Like, yeah. So have a will. And, I was so angry with my dad because he didn't have one and he's a lawyer or he was a lawyer. So I'm like, Menier, now who's dead now? Now he just called us here to like come and fight our own battles or what? Like for your kids, you're supposed to like write your things. Even if you are going to say that your wife and her children get everything, write it down so that we are not running up and down like this. So that was the whole drama. And I think that through that, that's when I also needed modes of escaping. So I just drowned in work. So I just started working, like ruthlessly working, you know, and I'm working and I'm working. I'm the last one there and I'm the first one there and I'm working and I'm working. Got myself a like extra work, extra work, extra work, extra work, so that when I come home, I'm just tired and I'm passed out. I'm tired, I sleep, and I wake up in the morning, I'm tired, I sleep, passed out. And that was just my routine for like a year. It was just my routine the whole of, like, it was a mess, you know? And I was going and I was spiraling, you know, out of control and out of my own control. So I was doing that. And then I eventually recovered. And right now I can speak of my parents, or I can speak of my dad, without crying, without being angry, without being about him. And it's okay, you know? And also one of the few things that I lean on to is that, even though I didn't get the love that I wanted from my dad, right? It was substituted by a man that gave me 10 times that love. It was substituted by my stepdad. My stepdad swooped in and he just like, yo, my child, you know, he was so important to me that I had a whole entire piece that I wrote and I recorded it. And there's a whole video on YouTube there. There's a video called Liz Dad. Like, yeah. And a whole poem, a whole piece that I dedicated to him, because he was such a big and important part of my life. And I get it. And sometimes when you are in grieving, when you are in mourning, right, you don't notice and you don't realize all these things. And that's why people can sit and say like, oh, I feel so alone when somebody dies. I feel so alone. But you're sitting next to somebody. And I know that that hurts, because one day I started saying things like, I'm an orphan, you know, I started saying that, but I'm not a full orphan. I'm like half orphan, you know, I'm a half orphan, just like I'm a half Vambu, you know, I'm a half Vambu, half Herero, you know, huh? Half. So now I'm a half orphan and a half a liver, you know, but I kept saying that I'm an orphan. And I think that at some point it hurt my mom. And I sat one day and I reflected and I was saying that, you know, this must be hurtful for my mom, because she's like every day, you know, she's like, I'm still here. I'm here, you know, and she has always been there, you know, I'm here. You know, I know he's dead, but I'm here. I'm still here. Like, you're not alone. I'm here. You know, me, I'm here. And I know that this is something that we say a lot, especially when somebody that we love so much passes away. We often start saying things like, I'm so alone. I'm so alone. But you're sitting next to somebody. And this is also something that, it took me a while to forgive my friend that committed suicide. It took me a while. It took me a while to forgive the man, because he made it seem like he was alone. He made it seem like he was going through his troubles alone. He made it seem like he was going through his troubles alone. And I felt so insulted and so betrayed and so angry about him saying that, because Bella and I were there. So when there were episodes, we were there. When there was hospital, we were there. When anything was needed, we were there. On the floor of hospitals, we are there. And now you have the audacity to say that you're alone. But I get that I was doing the exact same thing to my mom as well. So if you have just joined us and you're thinking, what are you guys talking about? We're talking about, how do you know when your grief has gone too far and now you need assistance? You need assistance to cope with your grief, and you need assistance to cope with the fact that somebody has passed away, somebody that you love, somebody that was important to you. How do you know that, oh, did I put the cup in the fridge without anything in? I need somebody to help me. How do you know? And how would you know? So, and then at some point, right? At some point, my cousin had lost his dad. Now, with my cousin, he had lost his dad, but his dad was such a big part of his life, Shem. He was like, your present father, you know, if he could carry the pregnancy, he would, you know, he was there, like from day one up until day last, he was there, like this, present. Now, he, like, my cousin that had lost his dad, right, had always, it's not that he wasn't spoiled. It's not that he just had a friend in his dad. And I know that many of you guys wouldn't understand that because your dads are absent. Wanda. But he had a dad, like he really honestly had a dad. He had both parents, but he had a dad, like, that was very present. If he wants to go to school, his dad is there, you know, and his dad would move mountains for him. And now his dad passed away. And he is now spiraling out of control. So it's the drinking. It's the drinking that starts innocently. And many of us are willing to accommodate, right? Willing to accommodate people's drinking problems because it is so normal for us to be drinking. It's so normal. Like, ah, Saturday, let's drink. You people that are watching me, I don't know what's wrong with you guys. Why are you guys watching me under the influence? I don't know. Maybe you guys are cool. Maybe you guys are like me. Nah. You never know. So he started drinking, and he's a person that's not working. So, and he has no source of income, even if, you know, he has no source of income, but he's every day drunk. So who's buying the drinks? It's other people. They're buying for him drinks, and he is now a full-blown alcoholic. And I think that the alcohol is not doing it for him anymore. Now he's going into narcotics. You know, this is, yeah, he's going into narcotics. And that is now where I step, you know, whoa, 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 kazi wazi, eh, baby bae, come here. And now we are forcing therapy, not forcing it. We are talking therapy. We are talking interventions. We are talking rehabilitation. We are talking rest, and we are talking isolation from the outside world so that he can just get his mind back in the game. But what he has to acknowledge and has to accept is the fact that he misses his dad. He misses his dad, and he's feeling lost. And many of us don't talk about that. We don't talk about the fact that when somebody leaves this empty space in our lives, we feel empty and we feel lost, and we feel their empty presence. We do feel it. We don't talk about it. And then also there is this thing of a timeline. A timeline is when somebody passed away 5 years ago and we assume that somebody should be over it. Like, yeah, but it was 5 years ago. It's almost a decade. It's half a decade. You should be over it. But how do I box up a lifetime of experiences in 5 days? How do I box up a lifetime of love, a lifetime of presence, a lifetime of experiences in 5 years? How do I get over and erase this part? And this is why I keep saying that when you are going to console somebody, if you have nothing to say, if you have nothing that you actually know what you're talking about to say, say nothing. Say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. Stop talking. After you say, I'm sorry for your loss, stop talking. Because the likelihood of you understanding what grief is and what mourning is slim to none. If you think things like life is just like that, and you will be okay, and he's in a better space. Like, what you mean is in a better space? What you mean? No, he went to heaven. What you mean? What you mean? What you mean is in a better space? What you mean? Because those are the emotions that we feel every time you guys say things like that. Like, oh, he's in a better place. Like, yeah, the better place is here with us. With his family that loves him. The better place is here, you know? So don't tell me he's in a better space. Say, I am sorry for your loss. Say, I'm here for you. Say, if there's anything you need, please talk to me. That's it. Stop telling people extra things that kind of just breaks their hearts. So now, even when this person has an issue, even when this person misses their loved one, even when this person is going through a world of hell and they want to talk, they will not talk to you because you talk things like that. They will not talk to you. You just see the person just becomes a version, like becomes a shell of the person that they used to be, because they, now this is the part where depression comes in. This is where suicidal ideation comes in. This is where suicidal thoughts come in, because now this person is really alone because everybody around them says things like you say. Don't say that. Say, I'm here for you. Say, I'm sorry for your loss. Say that Don't say things like it will get better. Like, what you mean? Everything that you're going to say is not correct. So don't say it. Just say, I'm sorry for your loss. I'm here for you. You know? And don't say, like, we're going to get through this. Through what? Exactly. You, like, we are going to get through my dad's death. And I'm going to be absolutely great without him. Like, no, don't say that. If you don't really know how to console anybody, say nothing. You know what I appreciated? In my many, many times of grief, right? What I appreciated were the people that just stood there. Said nothing. That I just stood there and assisted me with a glass of water. And I said, I'm here. Like, I'm going to the kitchen, ne, but I'm here. I'm coming tomorrow, ne, I'm here. Because even in the silence, even when you sit in the silence and you're thinking about, so what now? So from here, where to? Right? You're thinking like that. You know at least that when you turn around, your friend is there. You know at least that when you turn around, your cousin is there. Your mom is there. Your father is there. Your boyfriend is there. Your girlfriend is there. Your husband is there. You turn around and then you see them, right? That is what pulls you through grief. Knowing that you have people in case there is a day that you want to talk about how mad you are. They will allow. They will not criticize. They will not judge. They will not talk too much. Many of us like talking. You know, one of, I was having a session. I was having a session with, one of my clients, and, she's mourning her dad, right? And I know that many of you guys don't understand. Like, many Namibians don't understand what it's like to have a present dad that loves you. Many of us don't understand because many of the men here are absent fathers, right? So they don't understand what it's like to have a present father. So one of the things that she complained about in our session was the fact that the things people say. She said that one of the most hurtful things that she had heard after her dad's passing, and her dad passed away last year, so it's been a year. Basically, it's been a year and maybe a month at this time. So it was just only a year, right? She said that somebody once told her that she should get over it. She should get over her dad's death because at least she still has her mom, and losing a mom is worse. This person would know that because they only have a mom. But what happens when you have two present parents that love you and appreciate you and you're going to miss them when they die? We don't really think when we talk. We try to speak. We try to add. We try to console because we think we talk so well. We think we articulate ourselves so well in these boardrooms, in these meetings. We think that we are well-spoken. But psychology is a field that not many can master. Understanding another human being's empathy, sympathy, understanding another human being's emotions, right, is something that you have to pace yourself. You can't just come with your loud mouth. You have to pace yourself. You pace yourself slowly, right? Because maybe you would appreciate being told that, yeah, you know, when your girlfriend dies, right? You would appreciate somebody coming to you and telling you, ah, no, don't worry, man. At least it wasn't a wife. At least you were not married to her. Because people get it right. People get it right to say all kinds of things. Woo! Yeah? How do you come to somebody that's grieving a girlfriend and you come and say, at least she was not your wife? Like what? Like, at least you didn't marry her, so you are not a widower, so it's just a girlfriend. You can get another one. There are a lot of fish in the sea. Hey, this is somebody, you don't even know the kind of plans that this person had with this person. Maybe if they wanted to make the person a wife. And now here you are coming to say things like, How? Eh? Paramibians. Antirisanto man. Guys. Like, it's like you guys were not raised by people. It's like you were raised by animals. And better or what? Like, and sure. Like, how can you tell somebody that's grieving, somebody that they loved? And at least it wasn't a wife. Like, okay. And then also, when a wife does die, like, at least you are still young. You know, I've heard people tell widows, right? You know how many, do you know, guys, before we go far, dear Namibian men, stop drinking and driving. Stop speeding. You guys are making us widows before we hit 35. How can we be widows at 26? How can we be widows at 28? How can we be widows at 32, 34, 33, 30? Because of you guys' reckless driving. You guys are all dying in car accidents. Because you guys are driving badly. And you guys are making us widows. Like, hi guys. You guys are making us widows. Please stop. Change. Lundululeni, change. So now, your widow is left there with your auntie, the auntie that doesn't know how to talk to people. Your widow is left there because you decided that you guys are going to drink and drive and nobody's going to drive your Mercedes. Nobody's going to drive your Golf R7 GTI, whatever. You right? Nobody's going to drive your car. You're going to drive it under the influence. You get into a little scuffle, and then that scuffle kills you, right? Do you know what they come and tell your widow? At least you're still young. You can get another one. Like, can I just get over the one I already had? Can I get over this one before I can jump into bed with another one? Like, what you mean? What you mean? Oh, you must at least wait for 1 year. Do you know that there's an expiry date on your marriage when you die? Yeah? People think that, oh, a year is enough. A year is enough, then you get into bed with somebody else. That's what they are telling us. Yeah? So somebody else is going to be chopping me after a year after you die recklessly. Because we take the advice literally. So we are sitting there on that mattress in the house after you've made us widows because you guys are doing crack. You guys are drinking too much. You guys are driving badly. You guys are buying fast cars for no reason. And also, there is an age limit on the type of car that you are driving. Because you cannot be 40, Monga golfer, with a wife and 4 kids. First of all, your 4 kids don't fit in the back. I'm just saying. Stop borrowing our buckies. Stop borrowing our buckies. You cannot be 45, eh? With Monga golfer. And you want to borrow our bucky, eh? Us. Let's think about where we are coming from, eh? You want to borrow our buckies? How when? No. Our buckies for our kids. To sleep on a mattress at the back. Ha. Eh? Guys, you guys have to change. We have to find a way to balance. We have to find a way to make it better. We have to find a way to console one another. So the widow goes home, right? She goes home and it's now starting to mourn and to grieve, and the house is so empty. And then she's got your small kids. Your small children, eh? Because you left her with a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, right? Because you were speeding. Apparently, you have to be in Swakop now. Then you go and die on the road, right? Yeah, because if you just drove like 120, like they are saying, right? It would have been better. Because when you are driving at 120, the car is still controllable. You can still control it. You can still swerve. You can still maneuver the car. If it is above that, right, then everything else plays a role. Which angai, the car is not balanced. The winds, the sand, the tar road, the tires, everything comes into action here. So now your widow is there and she's now dealing with the empty house, the no man. She has to drop kids cause kinder. She still has to go to work and she still has to what? Now she has to look for a job. Yeah, because you and your nice position, you made my life comfortable, baby. You made my life comfortable. You made life, je ne sais quoi. And then now you're going to die, and then I have to get a job, right? Because your salary is not coming in anymore. I can't be a housewife. Wife to who? Now I'm there and it's playing in my mind. Huh? It's playing in my mind. What your auntie said, it's playing in your mind. That after a year, I can most probably get a dude. So there's that guy from work that has been, you know, eyeing me. So I'm going to get into a relationship with this guy. Right? And that's how you know you get too far because, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that. That's how you know, like, my grief is taking me too far. Too soon. People that died, take time, please. Kampala, take time because you are processing yourself. You are going through the emotions of anger. You are angry that the person went to drive recklessly and the alcohol intake was too high. You are angry, please. You are angry and you are alone and you are frustrated. So please take some time. Do you know that many of you cause your own deaths? And this is me trying to save you guys. Many of you cause your own deaths by the way you drive and your lifestyle. Right? You cause your own death and your children that you are living here because we're all making babies now. We are very active, sexually active. Yeah? We're very active. Many of you guys that are leaving your babies out here, right? Do you know what happens to your children when another man comes in? When your wife is a widow, she can't even think straight. She can't even look straight. So even the guy with bad habits, bad criminal record, all of that, bad habits, right? Pedophiles. They are creeping into your house, but you could have prevented it with not drinking and driving. You could have prevented it by taking a cab instead of driving your car home. You could have prevented all of this. So now your kids are going to be molested by some guy because you are dead. Your kids are going to be raised in some mannerisms that you don't approve of because you are dead and you don't have a say because you are dead. You are dead. You don't have a say because you don't want to drive properly. You want to drink and drive. You want to be out at night. You want to be in the midst of crossfires all the time. When do we grow up? Do you know, I've never seen a woman with a 5-liter container leaving, locking her car, walking to the service station to go and put in petrol. I've never seen it, but with dudes, your lives are so reckless. It's like an extreme sport to be a man. Your lives are so reckless. You guys drive the car until it reaches the last. I've never seen a woman park her car, take out the container, walk to the service station, and then walk back and then put in petrol. I've never seen it. I've never ever seen it. And it's not because women are better with money. It's just that men don't take things seriously. And they don't take themselves seriously. They don't take their lives seriously. Do you know that if you break at your age right now, it will take you at least 6 years to feel normal. Doesn't even mean that you're going to be normal. And now we have to process your death. Now every day we're chilling in cemeteries. Well, you could have just, how? You could have stayed at home. We are going to chill with my bras. Yeah. Everybody dies in the car. Then you are thrown out and you are paralyzed. Now you bring us liabilities again. But we're grateful for your life. But you don't understand why your wife is so bitter these days. She's bitter because she told you. She's bitter because she told you don't do it and you did it. You guys. December is coming up. Many of you guys are going to die. Eh? If you guys don't take care of yourselves and if you guys don't listen to what I'm telling you, Kucha, it's better to arrive late than dead. Because you are late, but yet you are still alive. You can always apologize for being late, but you can't apologize when you are dead. So now you are late and dead. Now you're speeding. Hey. You people are all going to your houses. You guys are all going Koambo. To Jesus' birthday. You guys are all going there because there's one big party that's held in the north for Jesus' birthday, like Jesus is from the north. You guys are all going there. You guys are all going Komafuta. How are you going to be driving? What's the route? Can you guys pace yourselves? Pace yourselves and enjoy your country. Take a different route. That main road, that B1, that's full. Take a different route. Make sure that you learn. You guys use the internet to be watching Matriarch live. But you guys don't use the internet to Google the map and say, 10 ways to get to Ondangwa. You guys don't use that. 10 ways to get to Ondangwa. They will give you all the roads. Enjoy. Enjoy your country. And stay alive. Now you guys are all rushing through that one road. And bumping each other. And killing each other. There. Making people widows. Making people crippled. Making people blind. It's difficult. So you know when you're spiraling out of control. And let's say hypothetically it already happened. So you're already grieving and you're already mourning. And the person already died. Okay? You know you are out of control when you're doing things that you wouldn't normally do. When you're having thoughts that you wouldn't normally have. That's the part where you need help. And this help, right? You can, sometimes you go once and you get it. So don't be so afraid to go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a social worker. Don't be so afraid. Sometimes you go once and you get it. Instant. Get it. Like, the heart just goes back. Closure. Sometimes you need a few more extra sessions because you're not only dealing with the loss of somebody, you're also dealing with underlying issues like abandonment. Like you feel that this person's death was the biggest act of abandonment. And that is why it is difficult for you to get to get past it or to move past it. You're holding on. It's to move past it, right? Or through it. Not over it, but through it. Right? And because you have these underlined issues like abandonment and disconnection, avoidance, attachment styles, or codependency, you have all these underlined issues. It's making it difficult for you to get here. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's like a wrecking ball out here.
We clawed, we chained our hearts in vain. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love. No one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you. I can never lie, running for my life. I will always want you. I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was wreck me. Yeah, you wreck me. I put you high up in the sky and now you're not coming down. Say I just walked away, I will always want you. I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break you up. All you ever did was wreck me. shadow
till my light beats your fears. Under the stars you fade away, afraid of a
misunderstanding. Wanna see us alive? Where are you now?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're ending our conversation today.
Crazy how you say these things, I don't believe it.
We're doing.
Don't go away. I'm good at living in between what you believe in. I wish I could change. I'm trying to push it from my mind. These feelings that I hide, they won't go away. Let's just. I'd hate to see you cry.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the likes of Loiso with Scary. And ladies and gentlemen, I want us to take this moment to take a beat, to be loved, to love, to experience life in its fullest. You are amazing. Even if you don't feel it, even if you don't think it, even if you don't know it, take it from me. I know you're amazing. I know, and you trust me, right? So, I love you. Take a beat.
Baby, you can rest in peace. You love me deep, so perfectly. Just know there's nothing I'll change about you. Hearts don't break right on the line. It's never even. Time won't ever change your mind. And love ain't even sure. To see you cry, I know that it would break me, but I don't think I'm ready to love you now. I'm trying to save your heart. I wish that you would love.
Moambo, dengira selma, onara heta tuimu, datunda tu heari hamanon tano, oa miyaj, ikele fem, so hai.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.